Welcome to the Business of Show Business with me, Jamie Boddy. I'm joined by industry experts and up-and-coming creatives as we unpack the skills, stories, and side hustles behind the entertainment and creative industries. So if you are ready to thrive and not just survive in showbiz and the arts and culture sector, you're in the right place. Hello, today I'm joined by international ballerina Constance Devenay-Lawrence, who after a decade of dancing at the Scottish Ballet can now be seen on Prime Videos at 12 and dancing with the London City Ballet. From centre stage to camera close-ups, we talk about the difference from dancing for a live audience to long days on set, transferable skills from a ballerina, and all things the business of show business. How's it going, Constance?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. You're obviously very busy at the moment with the London City Ballet, so you've got a little break, but you're picking up again at the end of the year with
yes.
the tour.
Yes, we're very exciting. We'll be performing in London, and then a tour in France, and more venues in Spain as well. So yeah, looking forward to that.
A little jet setter there. Yeah. So obviously, a twirl, massive Prime Video. I absolutely loved it. It reminded me of Centre Stage. So if anyone has watched that show before, or that film, that was amazing. So a twirl though, how was that experience for you? Tell us a bit more about who you played, because you had a little cheeky double role in that.
Yes, a twirl was completely surreal and amazing. Like, I'm still like, oh my god, I was in that. Yeah, it was brilliant. I was lucky to have two roles. So I played Melanie, who's one of the core dancers on the French side.
A little bit bolshy, I must say.
She is a little bit, she likes to strike.
Yeah, the picket line.
Yeah. And I also played the body double, dance body double for Lou Delage, who plays the role of Cheyenne, who's the kind of Madame Non inspiration of Etoile. Yeah, so it was amazing to be able to act, talk, but at the same time dance, which is what, you know, I do most of the time. So yeah, I really got the best of both worlds.
And having spoken to you off air for this, you got your kind of your shining or your break into that was a little bit different than a normal casting process. It was actually more from an in-person and your digital offering. So how did you get cast in that show?
Basically, someone that was casting the French core dancers saw me do Coppelia in London when I was with Scottish Ballet. And she said, look, send your CV. We're looking for experienced dancers, high levels, and I think you'd be great. So I sent my CV, showreel, some videos, some photos. And then they were like, yeah, you're in. And I was a bit like, what is it again? So it was completely out of the blue, to be fair. And then the body double was when we started to learn some of the choreography for the core dancers, and the choreographer Margaret Derrick saw me and said, we need a body double and I think you'd fit the bill. So they green tested me to see if my body and measurements fitted the ones of Lou Delage, and then luckily it did. So that was kind of that. Yeah.
And like when we first spoke and I learned that you were the body double, I think maybe you can spot yourself. Like, that's my elbow. That's me. But like the merging is seamless, yeah. I think, because like Lou is a phenomenal actress.
Yes.
And then her dancing is phenomenal, which
yes.
is also you. So the way in which they merge you was amazing. But what did that mean for you on set? Obviously, you've got Melanie, you've got Lige, yeah. you've got choreography. Also, you filmed in both Paris and in New York.
Yes.
So you've got all of that kind of choreography and blocking to remember. And then on top of that, you're having to then dance these leading solos, yeah. leading numbers. How was it balancing those kind of two roles on set?
It was a challenge, but it was fun. Like, it was really amazing. The whole creative team and production team were brilliant. Lou was wonderful to be the body double for. We worked closely and she was in rehearsals with us, and you know, to understand the kind of head movement and kind of have a feel of the choreography, like a easier version of and then when it came to shooting days, yeah, you just do it, don't you? Because you don't have much of a choice. But I agree with you. I think the technology they had to form our bodies together was brilliant. And I would say that the most challenging thing was to kind of get her character. So watch her act really helped me yeah. to kind of decide what Cheyenne would be like as a dancer, because I think, you know, that influenced the person, yeah. obviously. So it was great to be able to see her rehearse and act, and that kind of evolved how Cheyenne danced. But yeah, the challenge was always, you know, early mornings, shooting days. I had to wear her wig, so that was, you know, a lot of time in makeup and hair.
Yeah.
And then you have to re-warm up again, and then you have to just go for it. But yeah, it was brilliant. A couple of things that were tricky was sort of emotions, because we have slightly different teeth and mouth features. So I had to make sure I didn't open my mouth, because our teeth and the AI wouldn't be able to catch that. So that were little things that we learned through like the process. Yeah. So yeah, it was difficult, because it's almost at first stop the artistic freedom. But then after a while, you just learn to use the body more than the face. So yeah, it was really, really cool.
And I think what's really interesting there is, because obviously in acting you have stand-ins, whether they stand in for the initial setup shot or eyeline and whatnot. But obviously in dance, they do need body double, because although Lou has probably got some form of dance background.
She does, yeah.
She's not at that level of yourself who's constantly dancing in a company environment. So I think body doubling, it should hopefully, for a lot of dancers, think, oh, actually there is more work out there as well, not just if you don't get the role, actually if you're the right measurements, right height, there is also like standing and body doubling as
100%, well 100% yeah. And I think also it's really hard for female dancer who, if they have to be on point, because you know that just requires like years and years of training, which obviously Lou is an actor and she developed that craft and I developed the dance, so it makes sense that they use body doubles. And yeah, I completely agree, there is a lot of jobs out there for that, and I think dancers can use that to their how do you say that expression, I can't remember, the best of their abilities,
exactly. And like obviously nothing beats a live audience, but a paycheck from TV film is quite nice. So I think dancers,
it's very nice,
look into that as well.
It is very nice.
And one thing I think was really interesting about you is your casting process with your digital offering. And I think typically in the ballet world, you would think you might be an apprentice at a company, work your way up, and then you stay with that company for years. Mm-hmm. But in the freelance dance world, especially in like commercial, things like that, they do need a showreel. So what was in your digital offering when you had to submit yourself for that? Because again, in the ballet mindset, that's quite different. You might say quite short, punchy, like it's going to catch their eye.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, yeah, digital offering, short and precise, and yeah, nothing long, because I think directors just don't have time to watch like a 3-minute adagio or so yeah, it is a mix of stage performance, a mix of digital dance films, and a bit of studio, because I think that's important for casting directors or choreographers to see you in like a studio environment, because it's they see more of you rather than, you know, a character that you play on stage or makeup and hair and all that. And yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan, and my husband actually, Jamil Devon Lawrence, does this a lot and he's very good at it, of to have just showreels at no more than a minute. But it's just power, like your best jump, your best turn, a bit of partnering, anything that's digital, different format, different style. So ballet, contemporary, ponchos, no ponchos, heels if you've got that, jazz if you like, anything that makes you you. I think that's the most important thing, really.
That's nice, because in a musical theatre world, if you're doing maybe self-tapes or got a showreel, you may have, let's say, a 32-bar cut of a song, which tells a story and it builds up to that belt. But in the dance world, you don't necessarily want like a slow ballet bar, do you? That's not necessarily going to hook them. So it is those best bits sometimes.
Yeah. And I think also what's important is to not give too much, because you want them to want to see you. So actually just giving enough that they go, oh, I want to see that dancer in person. I think that's the best thing, because you want them to see you in the studio. And so then you get that call. So yeah, just the right amount of everything that you think you look the best in.
So what advice would you give to someone who's watching or listening who thinks, right, I want to kind of break into TV film? Again, you come from that classical contemporary route, which again is very different. Like, I was very fortunate when I did Bridgerton and other films, but coming more from the musical theatre training. What advice would you give to someone thinking, right, if they're in a classical world, how do they get into TV and film? Because as we said, A, there's more money, although we love live theatre, but there's also lots of opportunities to diversify your skill set, travel. So what advice would you give to someone to maybe get into TV and film?
Probably just pick up your phone and start filming yourself. You don't have to actually have training or have the best camera equipment. You just need to start feeling confident in front of a camera. And it's like confident on stage. You just, the more you do it, the more you feel good in it. So yeah, just pick up your phone, few friends and start filming yourself dance and just start to feel comfortable, because there's this weird thing that, you know, you've rehearsed something 100 times and you put a camera in front of you and then it doesn't happen. So it's just learning that you've got the tools and you've rehearsed it, and there's nothing different whether you're on stage. I mean, there are differences, but if you put a camera in front of you, you can still do the same and deliver the same performance. So I would say go for it, and it doesn't have to be a specific choreography or something you feel that you want to show. It can be anything. It can be yourself walk down the street. It can be different costume. It can be anything, you dancing on the beach. Or yeah, I think it's just that confidence of putting camera and starting to dance. Yeah.
So what I hear is we need to book a holiday, go on a beach.
Exactly.
No, but definitely, I think as you said, different environments, because when you're on set and it could be a 360 camera, and sometimes you're like, I'm definitely in this shot because the camera's there. But actually, they've used the camera at the back, so you're like, and your mum's like, where are you? Yeah. And you're like,
oh, cut.
Back there. How did you find, because obviously with your extensive ballet career, dancing live, and once the curtains open, unless there's an extreme situation for a show stop, you just go through. Mm-hmm. But on set, you said your call time sometimes 5-6 a.m. Yeah. You then have to do kind of a company ballet warm up, then hair and makeup, and then film potentially on point for hours. How did you kind of gauge your energy levels or keep up kind of your physicality for that? Because how long were you filming for as well in total?
The whole production started in February and we wrapped in November
2024.
Yeah, 2024. I think the longest shooting day was when I did the I Married Myself solo in episode 8, which is choreographed by Christopher Wilden, and that I think was a 12-hour day on point, which was long. But saying that, it was my favorite day on set. So I think, luckily, ballet kind of gives you that discipline and that strength. So in a way, I would say dancers are very equipped to be on set because we've got the discipline, we've got the adrenaline when we need to have the adrenaline, and we've got all the tools to be able to do it. I would say the hardest thing is the fact that it's not in order most of the time, so that can be tricky at first. It's like if you doing Swan Lake but start with act 4 and then finish with act 1, it's a little weird, especially if you have to show emotions, but I would say keep warm doing each take, and also you just have to give your best on every take, because I think towards the end a lot of us were starting to feel like, oh, the first take is never, it's never the right one, take it slightly under. And then there was one scene where they were like, that's it, we've got it, and then we were like, oh no, I don't think we were as good as we could have been. So give, every take has to be your best. And don't worry if something tends to happen. Most of the times on multiple cameras, so they might not cut it, or if they did, they'll redo it again. It's really about that connection with the camera and you. So it is different to performing on stage because everything, all that, face or the movement is so much more close up than you would on stage, so you have to do a lot less in a way, and I think a lot more genuine. So instead of performing out there, it's kind of if you're just dancing and someone is watching you rather than you're dancing for something, someone. So I would say that was probably the little tweaks, it's just, again, it's just experience and just doing it and finding out.
But that is such a skill though, isn't it? Like knowing to blend and especially in the ballet world, if you worked your way up to principal soloist, then you are like, that is your moment. But actually in that, the new ensemble environment of the TV is actually blending, reading the room, knowing what energy to give,
completely,
what the scene is. If it is out of order and your character's like, this is the end of the show, but actually you're filming that first, how exhausted would you be? It's being a smart dancer.
Totally, exactly. It's just thinking ahead. And I think the production team and they love that when they don't have to give that sort of notes. And so if you can just take a minute before and just think of that, where have you come from in terms of a character, what are you trying to say with this scene or whatever you're dancing, and And yeah, what is the actual goal of this? And then most of the time, naturally, it just happens.
But they're all skills that I think as a dancer you should almost adopt. Like, what is the goal for that audition? Or what's the purpose? Why am I going to that class? Why am I networking in those ways? So are there kind of any business skills or mindsets that you either used beforehand going into that project or that you've learned that you now kind of implement more now as a dancer?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say definitely what is your goal? What are you trying to say as an artist? Because everyone's unique and we've all did this 100 times, but it is difficult, especially if you're in a ballet company for a while and you're kind of just following a system, you tend to just forget actually who you are and why you're doing it and what you can offer. And I think that's like a very big difference between freelancers and full-time company members. You as a freelancer, you sometimes just like, actually, what am I doing this for? So yeah, I think you just have to learn and find in yourself what you're doing it for and what you want to do with that craft. And yeah, I don't know if I've got any tips for that, but I would say discipline in a way is a little bit key. Just, you know, just get to class and do your bar, do your warm up properly, do your cool down properly, especially when you get to my age and slightly older. It's really important to warm up and cool down and try everything, try different styles, not just ballet, contemporary, everything, because you never know. Like, actually with Etoile, when I met Margaret Derricks, you know, there was a lot of jazz and I had to go back to like the years when I was 12, 13, 14, and I did jazz and I thought, I would never use this. I don't know why I'm doing this. And then suddenly I went, oh, I should have paid more attention. So yeah, you just never know what life is going to bring to you. So try all these different styles, even if you don't like it. And most of the time you'll also meet new people. So that's also important.
Yeah, the amount of jobs as a freelance dancer I've got from actually even going to class and networking with people, meeting male dancers that are the same height and if they need an opposite on stage.
Exactly.
So it is a great opportunity. Yeah. In Etoile, they joke about how many times you have to do the Nutcracker. How many times did you have to film scenes for the Nutcracker? Was it many or not actually as many as we think?
Not actually as many. That Nutcracker was all right, actually. except the Coda was filmed on a different day, and that was filmed at 7 a.m. And that was, this is another example where suddenly you have to do like a Fuete Coda at 7 a.m. And I just thought, oh no. And I realized how important it is to do the pas and the variation. And then somehow the Coda just happens. But when you do it on its own, it felt like a that was tough. But yeah, the Nutcracker wasn't so bad actually at all. I would say that what the thing that took the longest time was sort of for the cameraman to learn the sort of movement and the path he needs to do around you. So I realized really quickly it's just mark until the first take, because otherwise you're exhausted by the time you actually have to film it. So yeah, that was the main thing. But the production were amazing at using multiple cameras at once. So it wasn't like we had to film it multiple times. They just had one being on the front and one on the other side. So, you know, they could capture multiple angles. And they were amazing at understanding. Like, it was, you know, it's a lot, it requires a lot of stamina, and they didn't want us to pass out. So
that's not good. But what I think is really, being on set is such a jigsaw, and I love it, because you're looking at like the sound operators, the lighting, the set designers, the dresses, the costume. So it's such an amazing kind of time when you see that kind of behind the scenes of the 360, which sometimes when you're in live theater you don't, because you're forward facing to the audience and that's all you see. So it's really something magical, I think, about being on set. Has it inspired you to want to act more now, because you got some lines, as we said, Melanie's quite bolshy, she's definitely getting that shot. So has it inspired you to kind of want to pursue acting or dance on film more?
It did both actually. I think dance on film was something I was always very interested in, because I think you can just reach a lot more as an audience. And acting, funny enough, my mother, when I graduated from English National Ballet School, she was like, oh, look, if you don't get a contract in the company, it's fine, I'll send you to acting school. And I was like, I don't want to do acting school. And now I'm like, I could have gone to acting school.
Yeah. Got that money.
Yeah. So it's definitely, I've explored it. I've done a couple of trainings with Actors Studio. They're amazing at Pinewood Studios. I'm learning and hoping to get some casting and act on screen.
And obviously you're originally from France.
Yes.
If you couldn't tell, bonjour. So obviously that also opens up the whole like European world for not only dance, but also acting. Mm-hmm. So hopefully now that skill set's kind of in your back pocket or you're learning, that could hopefully open up doors here or in Europe.
I'd love to. Yeah, I'd love to. I think that was one of the nicest thing about Etoile was we shot in Paris and my family were there. So because I've been in Scottish Ballet for so long and actually spend much time. So that was really special to be in France because I've lived, well, I'm French, I've lived longer in the UK than I have in France. So I felt like I was back in my roots, it was really nice. And I'd love to. Well, it's an asset that, you know, again, going back to tips, is just if you've got assets like, you know, speaking English and French, just use that to your advantage. So it's definitely an asset that I want to use.
But it's so true, because I lecture at a lot of performing arts colleges, and one of the first things I say is pop your hand up here if you are from another country or have dual citizenship. Mm. And I'm like, is that on your spotlight? Is that in the emails when you're pitching yourself? Because it is that carrot to dangle if you're looking to get an agent, or if you're on equal playing field skill set wise, that could be the thing that gets you the job.
100%, yeah. Any skills, driving license, passport, nationalities, everything. Yeah, 100%.
Because also, like, I know some people who work in casting actually find dancers who horse ride and stuff, because they literally use social media. They're typing dancers who horse ride, dancers who box.
Yeah.
Because they need dancers with those additional skills.
So true, yeah.
Get them out there.
Especially for commercials, you just never know what they need. So, all the skills.
All of them.
All of them on your CV.
So, going now to Scottish Ballet, which you spent well over a decade. If I got these dates right, you joined in 2008, was promoted to soloist in 2014, and then principal in 2016. What was that trajectory like? Because again, if you are from a freelance dance world or a musical theatre or jazz world, I think the idea of getting into a company or a job that could potentially be over 10 years is so far-fetched. It doesn't even cross your mind. So how was that for you kind of with that trajectory at the Scottish Ballet?
It was great. I think Scottish Ballet really became my family and my home. So in a way, it's funny, when I left Scottish Ballet and I became a freelancer, I was really stressed because it was a whole new world. I guess when you're in that world, you don't tend to realize that it's very lucky that you've got that, you know, that stabilized job. But at the same time, you don't get much freedom. I had an amazing trajectory. I felt very lucky that I got promoted, that I got to dance so many roles. I met my husband as well. So it really, you know, Glasgow was my home. It was brilliant. I think one of the things that is a bit scary is how fast time goes. And I've really never... When I got the contract and I moved up to Glasgow, I thought, I'll give this 2 to 3 years, and then, you know, I'll audition and try other things, and then 14 years and a half. It was really the best time. The good thing with Scottish Ballet is you tour a lot and internationally as well. So we went to the States, we went to like China and South Korea. Like, it was really amazing. I grew as a person with the company. So you obviously build a strong bond with other dancers and you become a family.
I think one thing I liked when working on a TV or film project is because you're with the same dancers for a long time, so it becomes like a little mini company. But I think that must be so nice when you're in an actual company where you do have to do company class together and you're touring with the same people and you're built. Obviously you don't have to be best friends with everyone, but there's, you're making some lifelong friends, meeting partners. I think being in a company sounds like a really nice, safe environment, although it's probably hard at times.
No, for sure. I think you're right. I think it's very safe. And of course, you know, it depends on the size as well. But I think most of the time, Scottish Ballet were between 36 and 40 dancers. So you're not close to everyone, but you have your close people. But it's funny because it's got its advantages, but almost it's got also this disadvantages, because you kind of sometimes can feel like it's a nice cushion, and you might not be challenged as you would as if you're a freelancer, or you kind of just you don't make much decisions either. You kind of follow, you know,
yeah.
you know your planner for the next 3-4 years. You know what your life's going to be. You know where you're going to tour. So it's yeah, you don't have you really don't have much freedom. Your holidays are set. You know your time off is set, and in the way that's great. But also, I think for me, after a while, I realize, hang on a second, like. What you know, I don't know how to pick my life in my own hands and do yeah. stuff with it. So, yeah, it's like everything. It's got its good points and it's got its less good points. Yeah.
Well, and it's nice to hear that side of it as well
yeah.
because, yes, there's amazing things that kept you there for so long. But then obviously, as they say, what you want is just outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
So when you want that progression, maybe yeah. personal or professional growth,
yeah,
it's sometimes
challenges.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
What
yeah.
was the biggest shock to you, them going freelance from that company environment, yeah. especially for like 14 years, and then yeah. being like, I'm moving to London, let's do it. Like, what was the biggest shock to them being a freelance performer?
I think the biggest shock was actually that it's easier than people think it might be. Mm-hmm. I was petrified. And I think sometimes ballet company directors can make you feel like it's the scary world. It is not. It's okay. yeah, I think it's you just I would say I was lucky enough that I have that I had good people that I knew. So I had like a good connection and a good circle. So I could use that when I became freelance. But generally, the hardest thing is to just get to class, I think. Yeah. Because when you're in a ballet company, you just wake up and you know your class that this time it's going to be there. If you don't want to do it, there'll be another free studio, there'll be the gym. But actually, when you don't have that, you have to, you know, you have to find your studio, you have to pay for class, you have to pay for the yeah. tube, which is really expensive. So yeah, it's building that routine that you don't have when you're not in the company.
Yeah.
So that for me was, once I worked that out, it was fine.
Yeah. Yep. I think routine and kind of almost going back to goals as well, whether it's a weekly goal, yearly goal, just something to incentivize you and keep you going. Because what I'm comparing the company like is when I speak to a lot of graduates and at college for 3 years, you've got your structure, you've got your deadlines for your dissertations or your exams or your end of year performances. Mm. But then as soon as you graduate, it's like, okay, go forth.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
And then you're like, oh, there's no one there to kind of keep me on the path or to make me go to class. So I think having some form of routine is important. And Jake, who's off camera right now, who's filming this, Jake Baby, everyone, he was on the podcast one of the early seasons. And although he can't remember saying this, he said, you can't plan your work, at least plan your time off.
Yeah.
And that's always stuck with me. So although he doesn't remember saying that, I got you, Jake. I've got you on podcast saying that. But I think that's so important. So at least have some form of routine to try and maybe avoid burnout or to help you still kind of find the love.
100%, yeah, 100% routine.
What was one of your favourite ballets you did while I was at the Scottish Ballet? And then what has been one of your favourite freelance jobs? So kind of both ends of the spectrum. Mm,
good question. I think the most rewarding at Scottish Ballet was David Dawson's Swan Lake for multiple reasons. I think it was probably the biggest challenge as an artist. And also it's the one I got promoted on as a principal. So I think it felt...
And does that happen like as soon as you finish your last reverence? They're like...
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah,
is that how it is?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. It's really cool.
Like a bouquet of flowers or something.
Well, you see the director coming on set and then everyone's like, oh, who is it?
Is it me? Like,
and I remember it was my dance partner, Andrew, was also a soloist at the time. And I really, really thought it was him. And I kept squeezing his hand. And then Christopher Hansen started talking. And then he said something about education. And I was like, Auntie doesn't do education much. I do education. And then I started to like really freak out because I was like, no. And then he says, yeah, and then he eventually said my name. So yeah, it was, I mean, the dream come true. Amazing. So yeah, I think Swan Lake really holds a special place in my heart. I think also, although it was David Dawson's version, it's a bit more neoclassical. When I was at school, one of my teachers said that I was an Odette. So it kind of always stuck with me.
Yeah.
So doing it kind of felt like, yeah. I can do it.
So were you like sweating and breathing heavily? Like,
have I done this? Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like, yeah. Ah, you're just like, oh.
Yeah. And then it's like tears and you. Yeah, yeah.
It's like that moment in Center Stage when they're like Jodie Sawyer, everyone.
Yes. Film.
Yeah. And then so now you as a freelancer, what's been one of your favorite jobs as a freelance dancer?
It's hard to choose because I think Etoile was completely surreal and amazing. At the same time, I do a lot of dance shows and performances with Ballet Nights, and that's really wonderful. And actually London City Ballet as well at the moment. So I don't think I can pick one. Is that really bad?
You just booked and blessed all the jobs.
Yeah, I mean, Etoile obviously, because I think it was the biggest thing, which I and also it's not something I expected ever. So I would say, yeah, that was such a cool.
And I think shows like that are so special because A, it was everyone was a dancer who was dancing, and then B, it was a long project. And I felt very much like that when I did season one and two of Bridgerton. It was the same dancers and you're filming for 6 months, sometimes longer, not consistently, but patchy. And I think just to have that community and that special, I think, although some, I said it's filmed out of order. There were some scenes in Bridgerton. I'm like, that happens? Oh, they did what? Because you don't know.
You don't know, yeah.
But yeah, I think that's amazing. And now there's probably lots of ballerinas that have been opened up to this whole world of TV and film because of shows like Etoile. And obviously there's some amazing ballet documentaries as well. So what are you hoping your career maybe does now, or how it may inspire a younger ballet dancer who's in training? Yeah. What are your hopes that your career maybe says to them?
I mean, I'd love to inspire them to, A, keep going and keep dancing, and know that a ballet company might not be the only job available, that actually they can be a freelancer as soon as they graduate, they can go more into TV, they can even, you know, go into different styles of dance, they can also move countries, because, I mean, for me, I didn't get into Paris Opera School when I was young, or the Conservatoire in Paris. So my teacher said, it's fine, go to the UK. So, you know, I want to say that there's so many different opportunities, and that if your friend gets it and you don't, there's no real right trajectory or the right way to get to your career. I think everyone's super unique. I didn't get probably to Paris Opera, but that doesn't mean I didn't become a principal dancer. So yeah, I think don't think there's only one path to your goal. I think there's many different ways to get to where you want to get. And most of the time you'll get further or somewhere else that you wouldn't even think of. So yeah, I hope I can inspire the next generation of dancers to become very versatile and to love dance and to perform on stage, on screen, and anywhere else.
And I think that's so lovely, especially from what, although I've not come through the ballet world, of friends who have, and you hear about how hyper-focused it is and how, yes, that is needed. However, the landscape for dance has changed so much because of TV, film, social media. Because a lot of ballerinas now are getting like social media endorsements.
Yes, yeah.
And they're like modeling like outfits with their leg shoulder. Like there's this whole other world.
It is, yeah.
So it's actually just training your brain to be like, oh, that's an opportunity. That's an opportunity. And sometimes you've got to do something to realize you don't want to do that. So like,
so
give
true.
It a go.
Yeah, yeah, no, so true. I think try everything, even if you think you might not like it. Sometimes you might end up loving it. Sometimes you definitely know, I don't like this, so then, you know, it's not what you want to do. But yeah, I think trying out multiple things is definitely the right way to go. Yeah.
Yes. Before I let you go, we're going to do a quick lightning round. It's called Lights, Questions, Action.
Okay.
And I'm just going to ask you some quick questions, and you've got to say whatever comes to your mind.
All right.
It's nothing too deep.
Great.
So don't panic. Okay, you ready? My first question, point shoes or bare feet?
Point shoes.
Paris or London for a day off?
Paris.
It's okay. You've got croissants, you know? Yeah. Dream duet partner. It could be a dancer or an actor, but who would you love to do a duet with?
Alexander Jones, who used to dance for Zurich, who I danced with in Etoile.
First role you ever danced?
I was one of the children in Nutcracker.
Oh, get on Nutcracker, haunting you now. On stage adrenaline or on set camera rush?
On stage adrenaline.
Least favorite dance step and your favorite dance step?
Gargouillard, least favorite. Favorite. Arabesque.
Classic.
Yeah.
Sturdy, good old arabesque. If you weren't a performer, what would you be doing?
I've always wanted to be a vet, but I'm allergic to most pets. So.
from a distance.
So yeah. That downside, it had to be. Yeah.
What is always in your dance bag?
A hammer.
Wait, what? Like, is this like, who was an ice skater when they like bashed their legs? Like, what is Tonya Harding?
Because I always break my ponchos.
Oh, okay. Good.
With my hammer, so it's not loud on stage.
I feel like we need to get you a brand ambassadorship with like a hardware yeah. store. I was not expecting a hammer. Okay. Do you have any pre-show rituals?
Yes, I always do 32 through the feet and then 16 releves in first.
Okay, before even like on set as well.
Yeah.
Okay. It's got one of those metatarsals.
Just a bit, yeah.
Yes. And then my last question. We've obviously been on the podcast now. Are you someone who loves to leave podcast size voice notes or do you like a text message?
I've grown to voice note, but I think I'll always be a text message, yeah.
Is that a UK thing? In France, are they voice notey or not really?
No, more text message, yeah. Okay. Emojis.
Just emojis just in France. That's it. Just so chill. I love yeah. that. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All I have to say is make sure you subscribe and leave a comment wherever you watch or listen to your podcast.